everyone. It is Michelle Ola here, and I am with you again on the Language Lounge, and I have a very special guest. Regina O'Neill is with me today, and I'm really excited to talk to her. We had a pre-conversation, and I'm really excited about this conversation, and I'm going to let Regina introduce herself, and then we're going to kind of hop right into some of the things that she's learned, and both about herself and just kind of reflecting. Because she mentored a new teacher, right? And that kind of was that was kind of what brought this conversation up. So Regina, why don't you go ahead and just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Thank you so much for having me, Michelle. I really appreciate it. So I'm Regina O'Neill, and I teach at the Baltimore Polytechnic Institute in Baltimore, Maryland. And I serve as the World Language Department Chair there. And I teach Spanish. I teach levels 2, 3, and AP. And I've been teaching for about 23 years now.
That's a long time. So you've changed a lot in that time, right? And you've grown as a person and as a professional. And one of the things when we had our conversation is that you are mentoring, in particular, a new teacher this year, right? And even just, you know, that act of mentoring, we've kind of talked about mentoring on the podcast before and how it's so beneficial to not just the mentee, but to the mentor as well, because I feel like that gives us a chance to kind of, you know, why do we do what we do and think about things and reflect on things in that process. And so you were saying that you kind of really saw some things and reflected and learned some things when you had this mentor. So tell me a little bit about your experience mentoring this teacher this year.
Well, it was my privilege to have a new teacher, you know, aboard my staff in my department. And when I first saw this person, they reminded me so much of myself when I was first starting out. I started teaching when I was about 23, 24 years old. And I taught at Montebello Elementary School in Baltimore, Maryland. First time teaching ever, you know. So I was a big ball of nerves. I had a ton of anxiety, you know, with it. And I wasn't sure exactly how this was going to work. I had an amazing principal who believed in me so much. And I can't tell you what that did, you know, just for my comfort, for my confidence, you know, everything. And so when I look at my new teacher, I see a lot of myself, in those beginning days.
That's
beginning years.
Those beginning years, right? Yes, there's, yeah, absolutely. It's not like a profession where you kind of hop on, you do a little bit of, you know, a little bit of orientation and then you're like ready, set to go, right? There's a lot of, I remember when I first started teaching, I was happy when I had the same problem twice because it felt like everything was like the first time. Every issue was like the first time. And, you know, maybe 2 years into it, I had the same problem like, oh, hey, I know how I did this before. You know, I can do this, right? So what are some of the things that you saw, you know, that you struggled with when you were a new teacher that you kind of saw or some observations you had? You know, what kind of advice were you giving your teacher?
Well, when I first started off, you know, they give you a plan of how this is supposed to go. I always say it's kind of like theory meets practice, but they never kind of add up, you know?
Yeah.
So being in front of those students and really having to perform was intense for me. You know, mm-hmm. And coming to the understanding that the only way that I was really going to get my points across or be an effective teacher was for me to establish some sort of classroom management, right? Because my students had to, for lack of a better term, they had to buy what I was selling.
Yeah.
And I had to make it my business to make connections with the kids so that they understood I was coming from a place of sincerity, love, and a true belief in their capabilities, you know, in their potential as learners, right? And that none of this happens overnight.
Yeah.
It was trial and error like crazy. And so one of the things that I remember is that intense anxiety and the fear and the, is this going to work? And, oh my goodness, am I going to be effective? Can I do this? And finding the strength and courage to come back every day and constantly reminded myself, why are you here in the first place? Are you the best person for the job right now? And so those were the initial things. It was just, you know, how can I establish myself emotionally?
Yeah.
So that I can do some good. You know, I think what used to catch me off guard all the time, because I was teaching in an elementary middle school environment, during the first years, the parents and the family members of my students would come in and look at me as the teacher. And I'm looking at the teacher.
You're like, wait a minute, I'm in charge.
Are you talking to me? Oh my God. I just didn't think, well, there was so much of me that didn't think I was worthy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yes, I have my degree. Yes, they were kind enough to hire me, but still, am I worthy to be your child's teacher? I don't know. Yeah. The shoes seem to be so huge to fill, you know? And it was my principal, Sarah Horsey, who also happens to be my sorority sister, who would look me in the face and say, honey, I hired you for a reason. You understand? Calm down, relax, take a deep breath. Get back in there and get to work, you know?
I love that.
To this day.
Well, because I think sometimes we look at mentoring or like we have a new teacher and we give them like a checklist, right? And it's like, oh, go over this, go over this, go over this. And just like with, you know, learners, we forget what it was like to, I mean, you'd still get nervous the first day of school when I, you know, after I'd taught for a long time, right? Because it's different kids, different students. But it just, I love that, you know, you saw that and remembered that, empathized with that, right. That just that anxiety and that questioning. You know, one of the things that we kind of talked about is like, thank God there wasn't like Instagram and social media when I first became a teacher, because I knew good teachers because I had some. I mean, I had some amazing teachers and I wanted to, you know, be like them in some ways. But now we have a whole, you know, internet of what you see to be curated, amazing, never have a bad day sort of teachers, right? And I think finding your niche as a teacher, that's a challenge, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And there are a number of things that come to mind when I look back on those days. I was surrounded with very talented teachers. So I was able to watch them and think to myself, I don't know that I'll ever be able to do that. They are so poised. They are so confident. They are so remarkably prepared, you know? And it made me think, you know, teaching is a craft. It truly is a craft. And one has to make a decision for themselves. Shall you be a master of your craft or shall you not? Mm-hmm. You know? And so I struggled with that. I struggled with that for a while, you know, and I wasn't very good at my job, you know, and stronger veteran teachers would see me and they say, oh, your potential is blinding. But right now, there are just so many rough spots, you know, and I can't make you want to do this, honey. And I can't make you want to perhaps take this class, which is going to strengthen your muscles here, and perhaps attend this conference, which will strengthen your muscles there. And it took some time for me to make the decision myself. One, I'm staying in this field. And if I'm going to stay in this field, I insist that I be a master at my craft, you know?
Yeah.
And that takes commitment, a firm decision, right? And time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love how you put that. You no one can tell you. Nobody can put you on a plan to make you a master teacher, you know, maybe an acceptable teacher of some sort, right? But you're right. I think, you know, becoming the best teacher you are takes work. And so tell me a little bit about what work you've done.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because when I was teaching in Montebello, all teachers, regardless of their discipline, were required to teach English language arts, shall we say. And I had no idea what I was doing. Nor was I really, I wasn't really functioning at my potential, shall we say. And my principal happened to walk in just to look around and to see what was happening. And of course, I straightened up immediately. I do what we do when the principal rolls in. She looked around and she said, as soon as the bell rings, meet me in my office. And when I was hired, I was a mother of two children, right? And I sit in the chair in her office and she looks at me and she says, how do you think you did today? Well, ma'am, I think I did all right. I could do better. She took her glasses off and she said, you think that you function the way that you would, are you the teacher that you would have for your own sons? Yes and no, lady. Yes and no. So I'm sitting here trying to fight the tears. Right? My eyes were stinging. They were burning. And she says, that's what I would like for you. I would like for you to be the teacher that you would have for your own children. You understand? And it gave me pause. And it was one of those many things that I needed, you know what I mean? To really make that decision, make that commitment that, yes, I am going to stay in the classroom. And because of that, I am going to be the best teacher that I can be for everybody's child, if that makes any sense. So,
yeah, it does. It does. And what I love about what you're saying too, is that it's about learning stuff, but it's also more than that, right? It's more than just going to PD. It's more than going to a conference. It's really looking at what you do all the time, reflecting on it, tweaking it, you know, kind of becoming, you know, that person that you want to be. And it's not always easy, is it?
No.
And I bet you'd say you're still doing it, right?
I am, because kids are different. You know what I mean? And I think in our chat previously, I was telling you how being a mother, for me, being a mother and being a teacher complemented itself so much. You know, they went hand in hand, because being a teacher really helped me be a better mother, and being a mother really helped me be a better teacher. Both jobs taught me you're not going to find kids who are exactly the same. You're going to have to switch it up. And every child is worthy of your attention, your affection, right? Your forgiveness, your patience, the whole nine yards. And so what works for this child is probably not going to work for that child. So find another way to connect with them. Find another way. Why? Because this child is worthy. And this child is in your class, you know? And like we said earlier, that's a constant movement. That is a constant movement. It's a muscle that stays in development. You know what I mean?
It
stays in development, because the goal is for everyone who walks into your room to feel noticed, respected, and nurtured. You know, this person cares about me. This person sees my worth and my potential and is willing to be a facilitator on my journey, you know, upwards and onwards, if that.
Yeah, absolutely. And so did you talk to your mentee about any of these things, or these things that were kind of percolating in your own mind? Or did you share some of your struggles and sort of your stuff as a new teacher?
I do. I try to tread lightly. Of course, I share things in you know, our encounters and our meetings and things like that. I'm trying not to saturate anybody, because I am a very intense person. And sometimes I could be too much, you know, and I don't want to overwhelm anybody. I'm an open book. I'm an open door. And so what I try to do is encourage, you know, as much interaction as other people are comfortable with, if that makes sense. The last thing I want to do is force myself on anybody, you know?
Absolutely. I think that's really telling, because I think if you do, you're in the danger of them trying to just emulate you, right? So to just be another
and honey, you know, that never
a teacher just like you, right?
But it doesn't work.
It never works. Right?
My girlfriend Yvonne Markland, she's one of my bosses in the district. She says it's like putting on somebody else's clothes that just don't fit, you know?
Yeah.
And she's right, because I did try to emulate some of these spectacular teachers that I was surrounded by. And the kids looked at me and said, "Lady, don't even try." You know, good and well, that's not you. And it was a humbling experience for me. You know what I mean? And so one of the biggest things that I tell other folks is that they have to, the only way that this is going to work is if they show up as their true, authentic selves. I can't be anybody but me. Nobody is going to do me better than me. You know what I mean? And that's what makes us all awesome. So to my teachers in my department, the best move that they can make is to allow their students to fully experience them as they are, you know? And that's the first step. You know what I mean? Students require that level of authenticity, that level of sincerity.
Yeah, absolutely. How can we expect them to show up and be authentic and be themselves if we don't try and do that ourselves, right?
Right. And it's absolutely uncomfortable. When you put on an act, it's so uncomfortable. It rarely lasts, you know, and it doesn't bode well for forming good relationships with students, with colleagues.
Yeah. There's so many ways to be a quote, finger quote, you know, a good teacher, right? Mm-hmm. And there's so many, I've seen so many amazing teachers, and they're all very different. And mm-hmm. you know, there's multiple ways to be highly effective. There's multiple ways to connect with students. Some do it through joking and, you know, kind of being, you know, very light and humorous, and others are much more serious and, you know, kind of caring or whatever it might be. But I think it is hard. And I know I struggled with that as a new teacher as well. Just it's hard to find. You don't necessarily know who your authentic teacher self is, maybe until you go in the dressing room and try on some of those clothes, right? So you try some on. I kind of like this one. It sort of fits, but not really. And then you start tweaking it and changing it or adapting it or picking a different color of the same style. And pretty soon, I think, you know, you start to find that. But I do think it's hard for any teachers, not even just new teachers, to know that it's okay for me not to be just like that teacher who's very good over there, that I can still be effective. I can still be, you know, make those relationships, do all of those things. And I can do it in the way that's comfortable for me, like you said.
Right, right. Because, you know, that uncomfortability isn't sustainable. You know, we have to be able to breathe. We have to be able to breathe in the classroom.
How did you find your voice as a teacher, your outfit, your shirt that fits? How did you find that?
Well, it helps to be strong in your field or developing your muscles within your field. Mm-hmm. Some of my problem came because I wasn't very strong. You know what I mean? And so I tried the whole very strict drill sergeant thing to compensate for the fact that I was a rather lousy language teacher, you know, and it was a number of people who cared for me is thinking in particular I have another sorority sister. Her name is Caridad Morales Nusa, who said, you know, one day you're going to make a magnificent language teacher once you actually, you know, work towards that, honey. And even though that stung, though,
yeah,
she wasn't lying. She was absolutely correct. And I had to get serious about what I wanted to do in this field as a teacher. And so once I started to develop my skills as a language teacher, once I was able to establish really good, honest connections with my students to let them know I am here in the trenches with you and I will hold your hand and let's go together and let's see how high we can climb. That started to work. I found that one of the biggest reasons that I saw student pushback and that I still see student pushback is because the kids haven't necessarily bought into the idea that I am an ally, or, I am somebody who truly believes in them and wants to take them to the next level. So they haven't bought what I'm selling. Mm-hmm. And so I need to take a step back and figure out how can I, you know, connect with this child? How can I connect with this kid so that they understand, okay, let's give it a try. You know, it's my attempt to lower their defenses a little bit and say, let's at least hear her out. Let's give it a try. You know, that takes time and practice and a lot of effort into building relationships, whether that be, do you mind if I speak with you just one-on-one to the side? Could you please come see me after class? I'd love to meet with you during coach class, you know, after school sometime. And having an honest, open conversation and just getting to know one another, you know what I mean? I'm on display for, mm-hmm. for everyone to see. So they are able to get to know me, but I'm not able to get to know them unless I put that effort into it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A lot of kids feel like, I'm not sure if you recognize me as Gina or if I'm just that girl in your second period class. And so kind of removing that idea of you're just a kid in my class and you're my kid today, tomorrow, and forever, you know, and you matter to me and I care about you and it makes a difference whether you come to class or not.
That's amazing. That it's fantastic. There's a couple of things you said there that as you're talking and I'm listening, and one of the things that I really liked that you kind of touched on is as you became more competent in your field and you became more of a master teacher, you also build then confidence and that self-efficacy that you can try things. And yeah, maybe that is not going to work. But I think that they kind of go hand in hand. If you feel confident, then you can become kind of more competent in things. You try things, but also if you start out with a level of competency, you know, like you were talking about your mentee, kind of that classroom management thing. I feel like that's always the thing that we never, you can talk about it and talk about it and they can do classes on it. And you can read a book on it. You can do all that stuff. But until you are in front of a room of individuals trying to, you know, make these connections, do these things, teach the content, all of that stuff, it's a struggle, right? And so, but as you become more confident and competent mm-hmm. in your skills in whatever those areas, then you can start to become that authentic teacher right. that you really want to be, I think.
It also helps to establish what your expectations are for the classroom culture. What do you want this environment to feel like? You know what I mean? And yeah. be insistent on said expectations. So there's no confusion. There's no surprise. Everybody knows how I am. I'm going to ask that you please have your uniform on. I'm going to ask that you please utilize as much L2 as possible. If I know that you can say it in L2, I'm going to, you know, insist that you do in a very loving and supportive way, but I am insistent, you know? Mm-hmm. And so once that happens, they understand who the captain of the ship is, because the ship must have a captain. Now, let me tell you, when I started teaching high school for a good 2 years, that captain was not me. I was Mr. Smee. I was swapping jets. You know, I was a guest.
You were working for them, huh?
And most of the time, I was an unwanted guest in their home. And it was very, very difficult for me. You know, I would have to go home and say, what didn't I like about today? In a perfect world, how would it go? How could I get, you know, the feeling to be something more that I'm looking for so that I feel successful, the students feel successful, and really ask myself those tough questions. In a perfect world, what would it look like? What would it feel like? And what would these, how would I be engaging these students? How would they be engaging me back? How would they engage one another? And I make note of certain things. Well, I definitely want it to sound as much L2 as possible, even down to the little whispers, even down to the little jokes that they crack. I want everyone to greet one another. I want everyone to be kind, you know? And, so just making certain that I was insistent on those things. Those are the things that I didn't want to compromise on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. I think that it's in some ways it sounds so simple, right? Like imagine the way that you want it to be and then think carefully about what is that environment? How are you going to get those results, right? And that's kind of what you know, that reflection and action and all of that sort of, you know, thing kind of comes together. I think sometimes what I hear in you that I'm so impressed by, and I think that many teachers that are truly masters of their profession do this, and it's that you don't wallow in the, this isn't going the way I want it to go. You're actively thinking about what tweaks, changes you have to make in order to get there. Right. And so you're not ruminating on all of the things that aren't happening right now. You're kind of envisioning that place you where you want it to be and then working hard to get there.
And that requires practice, practice, practice. Another thing that I realized that I had to do was model absolutely every behavior that I wanted in my classroom. I modeled everything to greetings, farewells, how to de-escalate a situation. And I role play all the time because that's what I do with my own children. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So the modeling definitely helped a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there's life that's in the background. Oh, too funny. Yeah. No worries. That's so funny. I'm she's surprised my dog's.
Yeah, she's number 7, my little one.
Goodness. Oh my goodness. That you can find any time to talk to me is amazing. You know, the other thing I was going to mention that I thought I also think so, besides just that reflection thinking, but also in a way that's moving you forward, you know, mm-hmm. and moving forward with that and actively learning what you don't know to fill in those gaps and all of that. The other thing I heard you mention is that person that, you know, calls you out, right? And is that, I know one time, and I wish I can't remember where I heard it. It was probably at a Lil or something. We talked about different types of feedback and different types of mentors. And sometimes you need a coach and you need somebody empathetic that's going to kind of, you know, gently move you in a direction, but you also need a critical friend or a person that is going to say, hey, let's really look at this here, right? And let's kind of, you know, really talk about what's going on and to kind of, you know, be real with us. And I think I agree that I've found sometimes I need that one person that's going to kind of just right now just agree with me and sort of nudge a little bit. And sometimes I need somebody that just says, you know, let's look at this. When it happens once, it might be somebody else's problem. But when it's happening over and over and over again, let's kind of look at some other options of what it might be and stuff. So I think that's also part of growth is to have that person that will kind of call you out on things, maybe in a still a loving and you know, absolutely, supportive way.
We as teachers are not too different from other professionals in the sense that people kind of like the smoke that is blown your way and the flowers that are thrown in your face. And oh, Michelle, you're the greatest thing I have ever seen. Oh, Michelle, mm-hmm, you're absolutely fabulous. And your observation was flawless and you get 4 stars. Everybody loves the smoke. And even though, and I've been doing this for 23 years, correct me when I make a mistake. As soon as you offer a little bit of correction, pieces, or they say you have a hidden agenda and you're being disingenuous. Very rarely are people capable of accepting true constructive criticism, you know? Mm-hmm. And me personally, I need it. I need it. Desperately. So I do choose to keep a couple of folks around me who, in quite frankly, in our friendship, are incapable of blowing smoke. Incapable of blowing smoke to me, you know? Because I am constantly on the path of growth and development. And when I really think about where I started, and where I am today, to the point where I am having this conversation with you, I am humbled and in awe of the work and everything that has transpired between that time and today. And I am really taken aback when I think about what is yet to come. Because
that's what I was just going to ask. Like, do you still have that vision of what you want it to be, and how, and what you're doing to kind of get there? That's what I love about when I first talked with you, is just that journey that you're on as a teacher and as a person, and how you pursue that. I think is just, I could hear it the minute we started talking, you know, just that. Always striving, like you said, to be a master of that.
So. Yes. So I am inspired by Robin Williams and Dead Poets Society. Mm. And I am not Robin Williams. And maybe one day I will be. Maybe one day I will be. But that is the aspiration. Do you see what?
There you go.
My aspiration is to be Robin Williams.
You want them all standing on the desks for you, you're right?
To my captain? Yes. Yes. You know, right now, I don't know, I might have somebody who give me a little beat or put their foot on the desk, or not that even the desk, maybe the chair, but definitely not. I'm not there yet. I still have a lot to learn. I still have a lot to, you know, to develop within myself. So as a perpetual student, I take advantage of every opportunity that comes my way. I try to attend professional development that I truly feel will serve me. I go to conferences. I follow amazing people. And that's pretty much what I'm doing. I have this incredible opportunity this summer. I won a Fulbright scholarship. I'm going to study in Cuenca, Ecuador, with a number of teachers from all over the nation, mostly from Maryland, though, I do believe. And I can't wait to embark on that adventure, because that is going, I don't know much about Ecuadorian history, culture, etc. So I am a blank slate, and I look forward to as much as humanly possible, and then sharing all of that with my students. So whatever I have in my head, in my heart, I give them. And it's funny because I tell them, this is a gift from my head and my heart to yours. And they're like, thanks, lady. Win the quiz.
That's funny. Yeah, is this going to be on the quiz? Is this going to be on the quiz? Oh, too funny. That's amazing. I absolutely love it. So what other things have you... are you pursuing right now? What other kinds of adventures? What are the other things that you are looking at in your, as you're mastering your profession?
Well, I would, I'd like to embark on the journey of national board certification. That
Wonderful.
I believe for me is the next step. So I would like to attempt that. I definitely would like to attempt that. That would make me happy. I hear how difficult it is. However, it's all about the climb, right?
Yeah.
Not necessarily the angle, but it's about the climb. And so I'm all about the knowledge. Anything that's going to make me stronger, more effective is definitely what I'm looking for.
That's great. It was in the first week in May, I believe, Stephen Lopez was one of my guests, and we talked a lot about the national board. And again, like that, like you said, that journey into mm-hmm. really reflecting deeply, deeply on what you do and how you do it and really honing in on your craft is both, you know, intense and difficult and challenging, but also very, very rewarding from what I understand too. So That's fantastic.
Here's to hoping.
I love it. So as we kind of end this conversation, not just your mentee, mm-hmm. but all of those teachers out there, both coming into the profession, but also, you know, it's a lot right now, right? I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on. It's not easy. We all know that it's never really easy to be a teacher, but there's a lot of stuff going on and has been for a while. So what kind of both maybe critical feedback do you have, but also like support and coaching? What would you say to teachers out there, just based on what you and your journey and what you've been through?
I would say definitely lean on your colleagues. Lean on your colleagues, you know, ask for help when you need it. And hopefully you have a good administration who will offer some support, you know. But the colleagues are the ones that are in the trenches with you. That one child who you really cannot connect with, who is really driving you crazy and making it so that you cannot teach and making it so that others can't learn. It's going to be your colleague that watches your class if you need to step out to breathe for a minute, you know, or any of those things. So I would say definitely reach out to colleagues. If you are a department of one, find somebody in your district, anybody in your district, just to serve as a sounding board for when you need to vent, to bounce ideas off of, to co-plan with, you know, because we're not just teachers, for goodness sakes, we're human beings. And so it's helpful to talk to another human who's in your field about life, the universe, and everything, because all of that plays a role in how we conduct our job and how we conduct business, right? So that's probably the biggest and best piece of advice that I could give. And teaching is not too far different from just being a student, in the sense of sooner or later, you're going to have to decide, is this for you or is this not? There's nothing wrong with taking a taste mm-hmm. and saying, hey, I don't like the flavor. I did try and this isn't for me. There's nothing wrong with that, you know, because I believe that everyone should be, or it's awesome if you have a job that makes you feel fulfilled. It is wonderful if you have a job in which you go on your break, right? And you sit there and think to yourself, I can't believe they pay me for this. And I promise you, even though I am a high school teacher and the kids turn my hair gray, children, I promise you, even on the worst days, I can go and sit in my car and say, damn, they pay me for this because I love what I do. I love what I do. You know that book by Paulo Coelho, The Alchemist?
Oh, uh-huh.
This here is my personal legend. This here is my personal legend. And the kids play a part in it. This content that I teach plays a part in it. you know, my family supporting what I do, knowing that my husband is going to hold down my whole family when I go away to Ecuador this summer.
Whew.
Because he knows that this is my personal legend. I am thoroughly grateful for everyone who allows me to do what I'm able to do.
I just love that. I don't have anything else to say. I love listening to you. I love talking with you. I just think that more people need to just hear positive things about our profession and even about our students, even though, like you said, they might turn our hair gray and, yeah. You know, there's all the stuff and it's the end of the school year and we're wrapping it up and, you know, there's finals and all that stuff. But if you can come back and find joy in what you do and, you know, and continue to, you know, work at it and get better at it and be the best you, I just think you're such an amazing person, Regina. It's been such a pleasure talking with you and getting to know you. And this Thank is you. Why I love doing this podcast. You are one of the reasons too. It's just, there's so many amazing teachers and educators that I get to talk to. And thank you so much for talking with me today. And I can't wait to see you at a conference or someplace and hear about this amazing trip that you've had and everything that you learned when you were in Ecuador.
Thank you so much, Michelle. I really appreciate it. I am honored to be one of your guests on this awesome show. Thank you so much again.